And now for something completely different.
Friends, it's now 9 p.m. Saturday evening, and you are listening to The Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. Well, tonight is, like I said, Saturday night, the 30th of November of 2013, and I'm making my new start here to the shows. Tonight, I'm ably assisted by my daughter. As you know, we're all as Tinkerbell. And so we're going to see what we can do here to get the show working, get it running, and see what we can do here tonight. So, as I said, welcome. Glad you could join us here. And so we'll go ahead and get started here in just a minute. Okay, so the first thing we're going to want to do here this evening is we're going to have to go ahead and go on out to my usual web page. I've gone ahead and created a web page here. Oh, what is it now? About 2 weeks ago now, just before my right eye blew out, so I obviously didn't get it totally completed, but it should be well enough to do what we need to do. So, first thing we'll need to do is we're going to have to go out to my regular web page that I have, and that is located out at, let's see here, it'd be at www.arlinn-tower.com, then /, and then tinkers_shop, and tinkers is with a capital T, so capital T, small INKERS, _shop. And that should bring you up to my usual welcome page that I have there. And what we'll need to do is scroll down the page here to a link that I have on the page here that's labeled Hammers, Tongs, and Twisters. Oh my. And so we'll go ahead and go out there. And up there at the top of the page, you're going to see a couple wooden hammers here, or mallets. And these were actually probably the first type of hammers that were around for working with any metal. And these are actually still used today when people are working with a bloom. Bloom is what you have when you smelt iron ore to get the iron ore, to get the iron out of it. And the way that's done is it's actually put into a furnace. They layer up charcoal, then a layer of iron ore, more charcoal, more iron ore, and on up. Usually they go probably 6 to 8 layers, you know, like a layer cake in there. And then it gets lit from the bottom. And as the charcoal burns down and forms coals, the iron ore drops into the hot coals and continues the process. And this is done for a while until they feel that there is enough iron ore has been smelted to give a good pool of iron down in the bottom of the furnace, obviously mixed with the hot coals. What's happened then is the fire is allowed to burn most of the way out, and then the furnace is dismantled and the bloom is pulled out. Once it's pulled out, then it's worked on with the wooden mallets or wooden hammers at first to compact the bloom. Because what it is it's basically a loose mixture of basically clinkers and iron. And what you're doing by working it this way with the mallets is you're compressing it down, pressing the iron back together more and squeezing out the clinkers, the silicates, the stone that's mixed with it in the ash. And once it's compressed far enough down, doing it this method of, you know, reheating if it's necessary and compacting it more, at that point then you can go ahead and move ahead and start using, you know, regular steel or iron mallets or hammers, sledgehammers to work it out further. But like I said, this is probably, is the first hammers that were used. The next item here on our list, it's a very early hammer. It's actually a stone hammer. This, I believe, is just a line drawing of it, but it's still has the basics of even what is now modern hammers. Obviously, you'll have, you know, both heads on there to strike your metal, and in the middle they would have a hole bored through it to where they could put some sort of handle, you know, obviously usually wood, going through the middle to where they can, work the metal. The next item down on here is one I'm sure probably most of you will recognize. It's just a common, ordinary, everyday garden variety ball peen hammer. And again, as you can see, it's got two ends to it. The rounded portion at the top, that's the ball, where it gets the name of a ball peen hammer. And the other side is just your regular standard hammerhead. What the ball is good for on a ball peen is that concentrates your force of your hammer blows into one area. Basically, you can basically put a divot or pound down a high area with that. Whereas, that will force the metal thinner and stretch it outwards. And whereas the other side, the regular flat hammerhead, that will flatten metal, or you can shape it more to a rounded shape or whatever shape you choose. The next section down from there is, you know, three line drawings there. You know, obviously one's a ball peen hammer, and, you know, for comparison. And the second and third ones, you know, B and C. B is a straight peen hammer, and that's where the basically the edge is parallel to the handle of the hammer. And this, the straight peen, that's almost, if you look at it, you know, end on, it almost is like a wedge shape, or like a shape sort of like a hatchet or an axe, but it isn't as sharp. It's rounded, it's, you know, blunted off, and the one over to the right, the C, that is a cross peen hammer. And the cross peens are a lot more commonly found than straight peens. Yeah, I don't know why. When I was looking for a straight peen hammer, I looked for quite some time and never was able to find one for, you know, for love nor money. I don't know why, but they just aren't as commonly found. So I ended up making my own, which I know sounds a little odd, but you know, if, with a blacksmith or a metalsmith, you know, if you don't have the tool you need, you can always, you know, make your own. And I actually had done that with another hammer. I, you know, cut and formed the head myself. That kind of brings us back down here to the next items. And you see two hammers here. The one on the left is what's called a hand drilling hammer. And the one on the right is referred to as an engineer's hammer. The engineer's hammer is usually 6 or 8-sided. And actually, most commonly, it's 8-sided. It's octagonal. And both of these hammers run roughly 3 pounds. You know, it's what you generally find. Some are heavier, some are lighter. But generally, an engineer's hammer, which we can call both of these generically that, run at about 3 pounds. And like I said just a couple of minutes ago here, when I needed a straight peen hammer and couldn't find one, what I had done was I actually picked up one of these hand drilling hammers and reformed the head. And what I did with that was I took one side of it and literally cut it down to shape, you know, cut the metal away to give me roughly an axe shape, or however you want to call it, a tapered wedge coming down. I took the handle out and you know, heated it up to soften the metal somewhat, and then I proceeded to grind and file the one side of the head, or one head on the hammer, until I got it to where I wanted it. Once I got through doing that, I had gone ahead and reheated it and rehardened it, and I basically had the tool that I wanted to have finally. And then obviously I went ahead and replaced the handle, and I still use that one to this day. And speaking of, you know, hardening metals and whatnot, there's a solution, or what's called Super Quench, that was actually developed out here at Sandia National Labs, which is right next to Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And the reason it was developed was the guys that work out there in the labs, they had a ruling come down from their bosses that they needed to stop using what they had been using up until then for hardening metal. They were, you know, developing parts and tools there, and they needed to harden them. And what they were actually using up until that time was basically a hot pressurized cyanide bath that, you know, when they would heat metal up and form it and bring it to temperature, that's what they would quench it in. And I guess their bosses out there figured, hey, you know, this is pretty dangerous. You know, what happens if they ever get a leak out here? And, you know, these guys, you know, they're working with, you know, boiling cyanide. And they were afraid that, you know, if they ever had a leak, they would, you know, lose their whole engineering staff out there through cyanide poisoning. So the word came down, nope, no more. You guys can't use that. Uh-uh. And so they got busy and developed Super Quench. And basically, Super Quench is a rather interesting mixture. I'll actually have to, at some point here, actually post up the actual formula for it. But basically what it is they take a, you can take a 5-gallon bucket, fill it most of the way up with water, you stir in 5 pounds of non-iodized salt, you know, just basically plain salt or sea salt, a small bottle of Blue Dawn dish detergent, and what would you call it? It's a surfactant. You can find it. A lot of people use it in their dishwashers to, so their, cups and plates and glasses are all spot free. It's basically like Basic I or Basic H, which are both from Shackley. But they're, it's a wetting agent. And it works quite well. People are quite impressed with the results. And actually, I'd actually seen a demonstration at one point where a person took a chunk of half-inch square stock, took a hacksaw and cut off the end of it, probably about 6 or 8 inches worth. And that piece that he cut off, he took and took it over to his forge and, heated it up, red hot, yellow hot, and hammered himself out a chisel, let it cool, and then he went ahead and filed it, to get it more to a good chisel shape. He reheated it back up to yellow heat, and he quenched it in a bucket of Super Quench, just shoved it in there and just swished it around. An interesting thing, by the way, with Super Quench, when you actually shove a chunk of, yellow hot iron into a bucket of that, the metal literally screams. It really sharp sound. And what he did then was, after cleaned it off, dried it off, he went ahead and proceeded to cut up the rest of that chunk of about a 10-foot chunk of, like I said, half-inch square stock. And it was just regular, soft iron, not high carbon steel or anything, but just regular soft iron. He went and cut it up into little pieces, and it lasted. Obviously, you wouldn't want to do that all the time with a regular chisel, or make a chisel out of a chunk of soft iron like this, because it can end up as pretty darn brittle when you harden it that fast. Generally speaking, if you would make a chisel out of something like this and harden it up like that, then you'd want to draw it back and take a little bit of the temper out of it, and make it so it's a little less brittle. Otherwise, this stuff can actually get hard enough to where it'll shatter. And let's see here. Yeah, as you can see down in the next shot here, I've got kind of a blank in here because I was going to put another section in here about power hammer that I built. But what you have here showing is what's called a helve hammer, or a trip hammer. And this one is from St. Michael's Furnace, which is it's a museum over in Belgium. And the way these work is they're the old trip hammers or helve hammers, were driven either by water power or wind power or even animal power, to run the pulleys and belts here. And it had almost like an egg-shaped wheel in the middle, which would lift up a long arm, and at the end of the arm, it'd either have a large wooden hammer, or a stone one, or an iron one. And at this particular place, at this furnace, or it was actually a foundry and a blacksmith shop, they would actually work large blooms from a large furnace. And so it's basically a mechanical way of doing the same thing as it was done, like I'd mentioned way back at the beginning of this page here, where they used wooden mallets. Obviously, with the wooden mallets, you can only have, you know, like maybe two or three people working on it to pound it on it. But with a trip hammer or a helve hammer here, they could work a much larger bloom. And I was originally planning on putting some pictures in here of a power hammer that I built myself. And that power hammer was, you know, like I said, my own design. Basically, in its way, similar. Only on mine, I used my own hammerhead that I built. It was made out of a chunk of 4x6 seamless metal tubing that I'd welded a plate on the bottom end. And then I melted up a whole bunch of lead and, you know, tire weights. And yes, I know back a couple weeks ago I talked about how, you know, tire weights and whatnot, you might end up with having some zinc or something else in there. So when I had melted this stuff up, I made sure I wore an N95 mask, which I'd soaked down with water. So that way, if there's any of the nasty white smoke coming off of there, you know, the wet mask would, you know, give me some more protection. And so once I had the lead melted up, I literally poured it inside of this piece of 4x6 pipe. It was probably about, 16, 18 inches long. And basically just completely filled it up full of lead. And once that was done, I actually welded another metal plate on the top. So what I ended up with was this, you know, large metal or large steel box full of lead with 28 pounds of lead in there. So I essentially have probably about a 32, 35 pound hammer that I strike on the anvil of my own making, which was actually made from a, let's see here, had a 12-inch diameter steel shaft. It had about a 6-inch long section of that, which I had welded to an I-beam and a plate on the bottom so I could have it standing up on end on the frame with the power hammer. And so with that 30-pound-plus hammer striking on top of this home-built anvil, I can definitely do a job on mashing some hot iron out with it. So let's see here. Pause here for a moment. Okay, yeah, like I said, I just had to pause there for a second here to kind of get the thoughts together here. So, and I, like I said earlier, I've got Tinkerbell here helping me tonight. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to take a short break here with a piece of music. I think this particular one Conk will like. So, yeah, with that said, take a listen. And after that's over, we'll come back and move on to the next section about the tongs. So, enjoy, and back soon.
A band of brothers and native to the soil, fighting for our liberty with treasure, blood, and toil. And when our rights are threatened, the cry rose near and far, hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah for southern rights, hoorah, hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah for southern rights, hoorah, a single star. As long as the Union was faithful to her trust, like friends and like brethren, kind were we and just. But now when northern treachery attempts our rights to mar, we hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah for southern rights, hoorah, hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah for southern rights, hoorah, hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. First gallant South Carolina nobly made the stand, then came Alabama, who took her by the hand
next quickly Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida. All raised on high, the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Here in the valley, gather round the banner of the right. Texas and fair Louisiana, join us in the fight. Davis, our loved president, and Stephen, statesman rare. Now rally round the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Virginia, the old Dominion state, with the young Confederacy at length has linked her fate. Impelled by her example, now other states prepare to hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Then cheer, boys, cheer now, raise the joyous shout, for Arkansas and North Carolina now have both gone out. And let another rousing cheer for Tennessee be given. The single star of the bonnie blue flag has grown to be 11. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah, for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Then here's to our Confederacy, strong we are and brave. Like patriots of old, we'll fight our heritage to save. And rather than submit to shame, to die we would prefer. So cheer for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah, for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star. Hoorah, hoorah, for Southern rights, hoorah. Hoorah for the bonnie blue flag has gained the 11th star.
Wow, that ended quicker than I expected it to. Okay, well, I'm back here. So what we'll do here is I'm going to take a quick jump over here. Oh, I'm being told... Okay, I'm told. Okay, now I got sound. Okay, I was told that one of you young ladies here had took a sneak peek down there at the bottom of the page here. So I'll go ahead and talk about that one first. That's a twisting wrench, and that's one that some people are selling commercially, but a person can actually make one for themselves if they want to do twists in metal. That's just basically an old style pipe wrench, you know, real old pipe wrench, or a spanner wrench. And my sound is probably down low again. Okay, there we go. Looks like Doc's in there. Hi, Doc. I can see that across the room. So see, my eyes are getting better. Okay, now old style spanner or pipe wrench. It's just basically a nut that drives the jaw either tighter or looser. And on the other jaw, the fixed one, what can be done is a person can put another handle on it. So you basically have this wrench in the middle. Again, quite often they're just done with, like, say, a piece of half-inch square stock. That's a very common thing you're going to find in most blacksmith shops. Half-inch square stock, 3/8 and quarter-inch. Quarter-inch works real good for, like, things like, if you're going to make a door latch or a hook for a garden latch, quarter-inch works great for that. You can make little staples. Looks almost like a U-shaped nail. Or three sides of a shoebox. You know, if you look at a shoebox, you got, you know, it's narrower than it is lengthwise, so the narrow part would be your top portion. The two long sides that you'd bend in and sharpen. Again, that would be, you know, like the long sides of a box. And so that's what quarter inch stuff works great for. You can also use quarter inch stuff to, let's see, what else can we think of here that can be made? Some small tools can be made with it. And, you know, little things. You know, the 3/8, that works a little bit better for making larger gauge latches and other tools. You can make, let's see what else, say like trivets, they can be made with those. And, some lightweight, tripods. Heavier tripods can be made out of half inch square stock. Or, let's see, yeah, that would work. Or say like, shepherd's hooks. And all these things that I've been mentioning, you can actually put twists in them. Obviously, you'd use a twisting wrench, for the larger things. But the way you put twists in is you first adjust your twisting wrench to be just a hair larger than the metal you're going to be twisting. Because obviously you don't want to have to be fiddling around close to, you know, 1500 or 1800 degrees with your fingers trying to adjust to something. You want to have it adjusted first. You heat up your metal, clamp it in the vise, and then your twisting wrench, you can just set that over the top, or you hook your metal with it, and basically, you twist. They work pretty nice. So let me do this. I'm going to kind of scroll back up here at the top for a little bit. You know, because I was going to talk about tongs and such next here. The top one here in the group of pictures in this part. The top one is just basically a basic B-flat, you know, farrier's tongs. It's used to either put in or take out a horseshoe out of your fire. This type is just basically, that's its purpose, to grab a chunk in and out. You know, something that's fairly flat or fairly square. Next one down, this is somewhat specialized tongs. This is a riveter's tongs. And these are actually, again, with it, when you have your fire pot there where you're heating your metal up in, if you're going to be doing some riveting for larger things, they would actually, you know, toss a handful of large rivets into the fire, heat them up, and these, they'd be grabbed out with this sort of tongs. It's got a round opening on the end that would, you know, basically where you grab the rivet, you know, by its shaft, guide it into the holes that you're going to be working with, and just at that point, you just peen it on down, either with your ball peen hammer. Remember that way back here when we started out tonight? what you do with it, in a case like that with a ball peen hammer, you'd use the ball end, and where your rivet is sticking through your metal, you hit that right on the top end with that ball. And if you center it on there, what will happen is it will start mushrooming the metal out, making it, it makes it fatter. It's about the only way to put it. When you hit in the middle of something that's hot with a ball, it pushes all that metal outwards to the sides and downwards. And once you get a couple strikes with a ball peen hammer like that, then you can spin the hammer around 180 degrees and use that flat side, and you just whack it on down. Because once you started it moving to getting larger, mushrooming it out, that pounding it down after that carries the process further. So it's kind of a real quickie on talking about how to rivet. Okay, next one down here. Let's see, this is a round nose tong. Again, this is another one. These are also used in farrier work. Again, it's where you want to be able to, you know, work a little bit closer to the tongs. You can also shift things around to work with it. The one just below that, this is another round nose tong. But if you look real close at this, you're going to see inside the jaws there, it's got like a little dimple. It's, and this is for like grabbing the head of a bolt or something that you have put a head on that you're going to be pushing through a hole. The one up above that is flat. Yeah, it's just, you know, specialized tongs for different works. And let's see, if we go down one more notch here, we've got, a bent or a duckbill tongs. And again, this is another set of tongs that it's basically a flat surface, again, but it's curved. Now, say, for example, someone was, think about a good example here. Say you were wanting to repair a garden trowel that was, you know, all bent out of shape. This would be a good choice to use because you can grab that curved surface and get a good solid grip on it. Obviously, you could use a flat tongs, you know, like the farrier one up near the top or the round nose one. But you don't have as much of a surface area that you're grabbing with. And if you want to do some precision hammering, you want to use a tool that's more suited to the job. Like I said, like with a trowel or a shovel blade or, some other gardening tools out there that will have a curved surface on, like a hand plow. This one. I've got a catalog that I'll probably go ahead and dump up here on the website. Possibly this next week if I can find it on the hard drive, or if I can walk Tinkerbell through finding it on my hard drive, we can go ahead and upload it. But that's a catalog I've got that I've put to, it's an idea catalog to where, I've had people ask me, hey, can you build me such and such a tool? And I go, you mean something like this? And, you know, show them a picture of it. And if they say, yeah, that's about it, but I'd like to have this done to it. You know, it's an idea book or a wish book or a catalog, you know. But, so you can have various things done with these. And hold on just one moment. Oh, sorry about that. I knew I had a sneeze coming on. I didn't want to blow everybody's eardrums out. Let's see here. I'll move down here one more here. Again, here's another set of tongs. This is a square nose tong. Again, this is for if you want to get up close into the corner of something. Say you were doing a bend on a piece of metal and you want to keep that bend good and tight. This is what you can use. Grab onto that edge there, and you can add tongs. Here's something else with tongs. Most people think of tongs as strictly as a gripping device. If you have, like, say, a small kink or a small ripple in the edge of something that you want to work that ripple out, what you can do is, like a square nose tongs, if the jaws are tight enough on it. Because tongs, again, like I said, there's a million tongs out there at least. And probably everybody who makes a set of tongs makes them slightly different. This particular one's, I'd had another picture of it, or I'd seen another picture of this particular one, where it was closed. And that was pretty darn close tongs, so that could actually be used to squish out a ripple in some metal. That, you know, if you didn't want to beat on the whole thing and thin it out by pounding on it, you know, sometimes you can squish it out. Next one here. This is a box tongs. And box tongs can either be round on both jaws, or it can be squared off. And again, like I noted here, it's for grabbing either small square stock or small round stock. Say, for example, if you're going to be making tent steaks, and if you knew you're going to be making a whole big pile of them, this might be a tool that you could use. You could get a whole bunch of blanks into a fire with a cooler end sticking out where you could grab it with this. You could grab the end, you've got it there, you wail on it with a hammer, you work on pointing it up, either square or rounded. You can do it that way. Next one down. This is a single box tongs. Again, this is where you're going to have a smaller piece of metal. Usually, for this one, it's for square stock, where you can basically hook your square stock in there and just hold it, flattened. Oh, and then after that, we've got here. Let's see, get my eyes to function here. We got this is a deep bar tongs. Again, this is where you'd have slightly larger, you could either do either square or round stock. Yeah, I think I just have on here that, used to grab and hold round stock. We can actually do square stock in there as well. But this is where if you want to have a little bit more leverage on the thing, this is for bigger stuff. So, a big bar, you don't want to just hold it out by the end of it. your grip is not going to be that solid. This, you slide it in there, it's like sliding it into a socket and grabbing it. And it just doesn't want to move then. So you'd be in much better shape. And now we're going to get down here to stuff that people normally don't think is blacksmith's tools. Good old-fashioned vice grip. That thing has it doesn't have as many variations as tongs do, but this was actually, it was developed by a blacksmith, because normally with the tongs, you're holding that metal, and you got to keep squeezing that as long as you're going to be pounding on that. And, one of the guys back in, Popular Science in 1935, I believe it was the December issue, and like I quoted here, it was, a new tool is both a pliers and a wrench. The Popular Science actually devoted a couple articles to this brand new tool, the vice grip. And like I said, developed by a blacksmith who got tired of having his hands getting too darn tired to hold it. This he could grab a chunk of metal with it and clamp it down and it would latch. So, and like I said, there's a lot of variations. You have straight jaw vice grips, where you have a flat surface. Remember that one? You have other ones that'll have a little bit of curve to the jaw, and you actually have other ones where you actually are meant to grab something that's more rounded. And like on the right side, you even have the ones that are like a needle nose, to where you can reach in and grab something. Just below that, you have your standard pliers, slip jaw pliers, where you can adjust those either to a big grip or a small grip. And again, you'll find a lot of smiths using those these days. Because if you, say, you have something small that you go on a twist, and it's just like, you want to do a half a twist in something, or you got to straighten something out a little bit when it's heated. Pliers. It works great. And just below that, a couple of variations on one of my favorite tools. some people, these are listed here as a bent nose pliers. Well, if you go to any demonstration events anyplace, and you see somebody, again, doing decorative iron work, probably 50% of the time, they're not going to call it a bent nose plier. They're going to call it a scrolling plier. That's for making scrolls on the end of things. That's where you can take and either pointed up to a long, skinny point, and you, when you reheat it, you can grab the tip of the, you know, the glowing tip of that piece of metal with the bent nose pliers, and you just twist it around, and you can just make like a little pigtail. And if you got to do two or three heats, you can always come back and grab it a second or third time. And also, these are sometimes used to, again, straighten out twists. Say you have like an S-hook that you've made, and you've gone just a little bit too far, and you pull it back out of the fire and go, oh, darn, that's too far. Again, you can grab yourself a pliers and your bent nose pliers, and you just grab it and just give it a tweak. And again, we finally get down here to the bottom of the list here, and back to our twisting wrench. Yeah, let's see, what do we got here? It looks like 10:03. Okay, so theoretically, I should be bailing on out of here, just so I can get everything back on schedule. You know, otherwise, our Just Measures Radio Auto DJ will be, you know, off kilter for time. But I'm gonna do one more little bit here. I'm just kind of giving you guys a preview. We had some discussions back a couple weeks back about tools, making garden tools and whatnot. And I'll just give you guys a little bit of food for thought here. I'll be mean and just say, have you ever looked at doors, the garage door springs, coil springs from trucks or cars, and leaf springs from cars or trucks? If we would end up with Teotihuacan situation or a SHTF situation where everything would be kind of right down the porcelain facilities, you know, people might need to think about, you know, making their own tools. For example, a car leaf spring. Admittedly, they'd be a real bummer to get out, but if you needed it, that would give you one heck of a supply of some really good spring steel. And, oh, say one 4 foot long leaf spring. Yeah, you're gonna obviously have, some tapered ends on it, and in the middle you're gonna have a big old hole. Well, a leaf spring like that, if you could get it off, you heat it up, and if you cut that puppy in half, it's going to give you two pieces of really nice spring steel that is, you know, 2 foot long, almost probably 2 to 2.5 inches wide, man, by about 1/4 inch thick. With a little imagination, and you know, a forge, whether it be a primitive forge or a more advanced one, a hammer and an anvil, you can make yourself some really useful tools. You could make yourself a very good, say for example, a garden machete out of it, which could also double as an axe or a hatchet. And actually, I should probably just save that whole types of discussion here for a later date here. But like I said, you know, this is just kind of to give you a little bit of a teaser. And I think what I should probably do here, like I said, so I don't get us totally off kilter and totally out of sequence, I should probably just go ahead and probably call it a night here. I do apologize for having a late start here. This is, you know, obviously my first show back here after I had my problems, so But this next week, I promise you, I should promise. The promises are dangerous, but I'll just say this. I'll do my best to give you guys a real good program here this next Saturday night. And might actually be able to have some little bit better visuals. So with that, why don't I do this? I'm going to go ahead here and just drop a tune in here. It's one we've heard before, but I think everybody enjoys it. And this will give me a chance to get everything back on track here. So, again, thank you all for listening tonight. I do apologize for our small glitch here at the beginning, but I think we kind of got things figured out a little bit better. So, have a very good evening. Have a good weekend. And remember, tomorrow morning, here on Just Measures Radio, you've got Natty's show, you know, at, let's see, what is it, 9 o'clock in the morning? Is it 10 o'clock? Oh, boy. Getting old. Can't remember anymore. So, anyway, thank you very much. Have a good evening. And I'm going to kind of slip on out of here with a little piece of John Anderson's music. Take care. God bless. And talk to y'all later.
Thank you. folk went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw a-plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw.
Yippee-i-yo,
the ghost bird in the sky.
Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry.
Yippee-i-yay, yippee-i-o,
ghost riders in the sky.
Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught them yet.
Cause they got to ride forever in that range up in the sky.
On horses snorting fire, as they ride on, hear their cry.
Yippee-i-yay,
ghost riders in the sky.
As the riders loped on by him, he heard one call his name.
If you want to save your soul from hell, a riding on our range,
then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride. I'm trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
Yippee-i-yay,
yippee-i-yay,
yippee-i-yo,
yippee-i-yo,
ghost riders in the sky.
For joining me tonight here on the Tinker Shop on Just Measures Radio. This is the show for November 30th of 2013. I'll be back next Saturday, 9 o'clock Central Time. Please join me then, and we'll have some more fun. Take care, and good night.